All right, good every evening, everybody. Welcome to our 3 Ideas in 30 Minutes, a Shavasar Vatamas edition. Pre-gaming Shavasar Vatamas. Tonight, everyone is a winner, because if you are eating that before a fast day, God bless you all. You have better stomachs than I do, and you have better tolerance for... I think a hot dog is like literally the worst thing you could eat before a fast day, but I don't know. I guess we'll find out tomorrow night who does better, me or you. All right, I want to thank our very generous sponsors for this evening's shiur, sponsored by Martin Shandelson. In memory of his mother, Hilda Shandelson, her yahrzeit was this week, and her neshama should have an aliyah, and by Dr. Michael and Marilyn Fedak. In gratitude for the many weekly learning opportunities at BRS, we continue to be very grateful to the Fedaks for their very generous sponsorship. And as always, our learning should be an aliyah for the neshama of Esther Tehila and Bas Gabriel Pinchas. Okay, Parshas Pinchas, my middle name, Pinchas, of course, zealotry. Where maybe that's where some of my personality comes from. Who knows? You'll have to ask my children and my wife what they think. But of course, Parshas Pinchas begins with the aftermath of what happened at the end of last week's Parsha, where Pinchas saw what happened between Zimri and Cusbi, took heroic action, killed them, stopped a plague, 24,000 people were killed, and Pinchas is the hero. Of course, he's the hero not for so long, because then Moshe creates a transition, succession of power, and Pinchas does not get the leadership. Instead, Yoshua is going to be the leader. That story is in our Parsha as well. Okay, here we go at the beginning of the Parsha. So right after telling us about Pinchas and about his heroic action, the Torah throws in a very bizarre pasuk. And it's on page number one, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Tzaror es ha-midyanim v'kisem osam. Now the word tzaror is a little bit strange. Rashi, the Ibn Ezra, many point out that it's from the language of Zachor. Like Zachor es Yom HaShabbos, you're supposed to remember Shabbos. So too, you're supposed to remember what the Midianim did, and you're supposed to kill them. Now, the Or HaChaim, whose yahrzeit was, I believe, last night, this week at some point, the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, I think it might be one of our first Or HaChaim appearances in our 3 Ideas in 30 Minutes, but he has an amazing idea over here. And his question is very obvious. Is this the last time we're going to talk about Midian? When are we going to go battle to Midian? Not in this week's Parsha. When is it going to be? Next week's Parsha. Next week's Parsha, we're going to continue with the battle of Midian. If that's the case, ask the Or HaChaim, why do we mention it here at all? He says in the bottom of page number one, V'nira lefarish, we have to understand, Lama tziva Hashem mitzvah zo shelo bizmana. Why is Hashem referencing this mitzvah out of place? Ki matzinu, because we find that in next week's Parsha, Nikom Nikmas B'nei Yisrael Meisa Midyanim, Hashem is once again going to command us to take revenge against Midian. So why is it that we're referencing here at all? What does it have to do with the story of Pinchas whatsoever? It's a great question. I never really thought about it, what it's doing here at all. Listen to what the Or HaChaim writes, and it's not just an amazing understanding of why this pasuk of Midian appears here, but it's an amazing insight into psychology. Really an amazing insight into psychology. Page number two. I'm not sure what I was thinking when I wrote that number two on the bottom, but hopefully everyone will figure it out. He writes here the following. Achein, niskavein Hashem. Then what did Hashem have in mind? Listen to his language. It's so powerful. Lufisha kol asher yitom tam chet hativi. Anyone who tastes a little bit of sin, hasholeh ba'adam shelo birtzono. It's going to have an impact on a person. Lo yesh lo tamo ela b'chinas achoshev kashu lafrido. Even if he's only thinking about that sin, it's still going to have an impact on him, and it's going to be difficult for him to separate himself from it. Therefore, and I'll tell it to you outside, then we'll read a little bit more inside. What is this doing here? Well, what just happened to the Jewish people? They saw Zimri and Cusbi. Zimri and Cusbi weren't playing mahjong. Right? They were doing something far more nefarious and salacious and promiscuous. Now, don't forget, they also weren't doing it in the privacy of their homes. Imagine, I wouldn't say Lahavdil Times Square, because it basically happens in Times Square every night, but imagine going to Times Square and you see Zimri, instead of the billboards that we have in Times Square, you see Zimri and Cusbi literally in the middle of Times Square doing what they were doing. All of a sudden, Pinchas jumps out of nowhere, kills them both, saves the day. But what else was happening at the time, says the Or HaChaim? Everyone else was seeing what was happening with Zimri and Cusbi, and even if they knew it was bad, listen to his language. Asher yitom tam chet. They tasted a little bit of what the sin was. They got a little bit of a geschmack out of seeing what was happening. And therefore, they were excited by that just a little bit. And so what happens is, he writes, even if you just think about the sin, it's going to have an impact on you. He says in the next paragraph, Umar shelefanenu am bnei Yisrael, tamo arevas znus. They saw the sweetness of what promiscuity can bring. Obviously, sweetness is satirical. Of what promiscuity can bring. Mehem b'maise, mehem b'machshava. Some people saw it in action. Some people were just thinking about it. But what's the end result? The end result is that it has an impact on them. And it makes them tempted to do it all the more so. And so therefore, what do we have to do, says the Or Chaim? We have to remove ourselves from it. It's not just enough to resist the temptation, but rather what you have to do is you have to stay away from it altogether. You have to make it clear to yourself that that is wrong, and therefore I have to do things to separate myself from the temptation altogether. Now, he says, you understand why it appears where it appears. We have the story of Zimri and Cosby. The entire Jewish people saw this act of promiscuity, and whether they liked it or not, they were tempted by it. Asher yitu tam chet. They taste a little bit of the sin. Hashole ba'adam shalol urtzono. And whether you like it or not, it's going to have an impact on you. So what's the very next pasuk in the Torah? Tsaror es ha-midyanim. Which means you have to rid yourself of Midian. It's not just enough to resist the temptation. You have to get rid of it altogether. And therefore, look at what he says at the bottom of page number 2, my underlines. He says, "Ve'emtzaus machshava zo tia mitracheket tayves avera mehem." They had to distance themselves from the desire to do this avera. "V'tielahem lizara." It had to be, how do you translate lizara? It had to be completely foreign to them. "Ki ala aver sonim hasove v'yulabem teva eloki." They had to detest, and they had to learn to hate this level of promiscuity, this level of sin, this level of temptation. Listen to what he says. He says something so unbelievable. Umida zo, mida segulit. He said, this is a skula. In other words, it's a good thing to do. He lechafetz b'chaim. Someone who wants to live a long life, they want to live a life of vibrancy and dynamism. Bazei yischaper avon akodem b'machshav avodazara gam be'ares taivas haniyuf. They have to be careful of how they approach this topic of promiscuity. Velo yebem negev, and they can't allow it to plague them, just like it plagued the Jewish people. Now he says, you understand the pasuk, tzarur samidyanim. Perish yelechem begeder tsar, ve'oyev lesonasam. They had to approach Midian like an enemy. They had to hate them, and they had to treat them like enemy. Ulesano kol ha'arev mehem lahashchis etzem ulekalkem miyunusam zeh. And that was the only way to remove the temptation from them. So why do I love this idea? First of all, I think it's an amazing reading into the pasuk. That on the one hand, the Jewish people, whether they liked it or not, when you see that level of sin, when you see that promiscuity, you're drawn towards it. You're curious about it, perhaps. And therefore, it impacts you and it affects you. So therefore, the pasuk has to come and say, tsaror es ha-midyanim. What was the language of tsaror? It's not just that you have to remember it, like Rashi told us, but rather tsar, you have to make it the enemy. It's not just enough to tell yourself you're going to resist the temptation. You have to view it as if it is something foreign to you. It is untouchable to you. It is the enemy towards you. So it's a beautiful read in the pasuk. But I think more than that, I think it's a very important lesson for us in our day and age. Because we, as we always joke around, see in one day more than the Chafetz Chaim saw in his entire lifetime. That's just a fact. You drive down 95, the billboards about air conditioners, right? We see more in a minute, probably, than the Chafetz Chaim saw in his lifetime. Let alone the fact that we are on computers and devices, and that every reel and every video and every image that we see, and it could be innocuous, it could be something that's accidental, something that pops up on your screen, perhaps it's an advertisement, something you weren't even looking for. But we have to understand that whether we realize it or not, it leaves a mark. And it makes an impact on us. And so therefore, says the Or Chaim, the result or the response can't just be to tell yourself, oh, I'm going to resist the temptation. No, you have to do things that are going to make you stay away from it in the first place altogether. that you have to understand what is right and what is wrong. And when something is wrong, you have to view it as if it is the enemy, and you have to treat it as such. And so it's not enough to just say that I'm going to resist the temptation. That's naive. We know great people who have failed miserably to resist temptation at all aspects of their life. Very successful people. People who had everything to lose and also everything to gain. And they lost it all simply because they couldn't resist the temptation. And yet you think you're going to put yourself in that situation, you're going to be able to resist the temptation? So the answer is sometimes, Sarur Samidyanim. We have to understand that the Yetzer Hara is evil. The Yetzer Hara is trying to get us. It's trying to tempt us. And the response can't be, you know what? Let me put myself in this situation. I'm going to prove to the Yetzer Hara that I'm better than that. History has proven that that is unsuccessful time and time again. Sometimes we have to understand that we have to fight it like a battle. And the answer is to view it like an enemy. Sometimes that means putting up gedarim, by putting up barriers between you and the temptation. Maybe that's a filter. Maybe that's where you put the computer in your house. Maybe that's the type of device you have. Other times it's understanding that the same way you would approach an enemy and you would think about tactics of how you're going to take on the enemy, the Yetzer Hara is no different. So idea number one from the Or Chaim is essentially that we have to guard our eyes. We have to guard our behavior. Why? Because you become what you scroll. It's naive to think that we can see things and have it not leave a mark. But rather, whether we realize it or not, is leaving the mark. And therefore, we have to be much more careful about what we look at and how we experience our interaction with the temptations that Western civilization presents us with. That is idea number one. Idea number two comes from a beautiful Parsha sheet that I came across. I don't remember who wrote it, but you have it here on page number 3. And he writes here the following. Again, such a beautiful idea. The Pasuk tells us that when it comes to the transition from Yoshua to Moshe, Yifkod Hashem Elokei Aruchos L'cho Basar Ish Al Ha'ida. He tells Hashem, can you appoint someone over the people? Okay? Rashi says that Moshe understands that his time is coming to an end. And therefore he says, Kedai hu Yoshua litol schar shimusho, shalomash mitocha ochel. Why should Yoshua be chosen? Yoshua should be chosen because he never left the base medrash. Yoshua was the biggest masmid. He stayed, he was the first one in shul in the morning. He was the last one in the base medrash at night. He stayed there diligently learning constantly. And then Rashi quotes a pasuk. Vizesh amar Shlomo, you want to know why Yoshua was worthy? Because Shlomo says, Notzir te'ina yochel piria, that someone who is diligent about the fig will be able to eat its fruit. Okay, ask this beautiful Parsha sheet. What does that have to do with Yoshua? Why, when we're describing Yoshua being fit for leadership, do we use the analogy of a fig? What does a fig have to do with it? He says, he named Nimshala and Haga Yoshua, Shelo Yamush Mitocha Oel. That description of Yoshua and his diligence in learning, it's compared to Lensira Sateina, to the creation of a fig. So what is the connection? Near Levar Bezedi ne Nitsira Sateina Yeshinim Yuchad Tormi Kola Peros. He says the fig is different from all other fruits. Now I am not a botanist. I don't know what the correct word. That's probably for a tree, right? Yeah. What would it be for a fruit? A fruitologist? Yeah? A fruit? What? A fruitarian? Are you? Is fruitologist really a word, or are you making that up?
Do you want it to be a word?
I'm going to say it's a word, and then my mother's going to correct me, but I'm telling you right now, Jonah Rosenblatt coined the word here, fruitologist or fruitarian. Okay? None of us tonight, by the way, eating hot dogs, are either one of those. Okay. Although you have, I think you have, there's some... Ketchup. It's from a fruit.
Relish.
Relish is a vegetable. Okay. For the record, for those who are listening, I don't think I've touched a hot dog in my entire life. So when I make fun, I jest with the chevra here in the shir. Okay. So what is it about figs? What would a fruitologist say? So he writes here that the fig is unique. Shel olam tsarich lishmor al ta'ina. That you have to continuously watch over a fig. He says that's the Gemara in Erevin writes. That a fig, so long as a person is taking care of it, it's going to bear fruit. Rashi says over there on the Gemara Ervin, that the teina, the fig is unique in that it does not ripen all at once. Ela hayom me'at ulamachar me'at. It ripens a little bit today, a little bit tomorrow. V'chol shah roi le'echomen. And therefore, I have to constantly take care of it because it's going to ripen a little bit every day. And therefore, if I skip a day of taking care of the fig, it's simply not going to ripen properly, and you're not going to have the proper fruit. So he writes that the fig is unique in the sense that it's not like I'll take care of it once and then be done with it, but it takes constant and consistent attention to the fig, and if I miss a day of taking care of the fig, it's not going to bear its fruit properly. Isn't he says, what?
Doesn't all fruit ripen a little bit at a time?
I don't know. You'll have to ask the fruitologists amongst us. He says, ubishvil la'sofa te'inim, he says to take care of the fig, Sarich lishmor aleh kol asman below hefsek. He says you can't break from taking care of the fig. For tamid lios muchan umazuman lalak etenim umuchanim yad kedesh shelo yiplume. It's veyivsedu. You have to constantly be picking it because if you don't, it's going to fall down. You're going to lose it altogether. Now he says you understand why Rashi compares Yehoshua and his diligence in the base medrash to the fig in particular, because the Gemara in Beitza tells us Amarav. La'olam al yimna adam atzma mibeis ha-medrash afilo sha'achas. Torah learning is unique in that it requires that same level of consistency. The Gemara tells us that you can't skip a day of learning, and that if you do skip a day of learning, you might skip one day, but it's going to take you 2 days to make it up. That's how, so to speak, catastrophic it is to miss a day of learning. It's like you take one step backward, take one step. No, that was a bad analogy. But you're going to miss one day, and it's going to take you 2 days to make it up. Therefore, he writes, now you understand why the fig is compared to Yehoshua. Because what was the defining characteristic of Yehoshua? The defining characteristic of Yehoshua was his diligence in learning. Shelo yimna atzmo afilu sha'achas mi beis ha-medrash. Yehoshua was always in the beis medrash learning. He was the first one there in the morning. He was the last one there in the afternoon. B'chol eisa v'chol shah lo hamish mitocha oel. He never left the beis medrash. V'mechaser sha'achas hari mafsir b'zeh. And if you do leave the beis medrash, you lose. You lose that much more. He says, ulfi zeh yesh lomar habir b'mash nimshala hanhagas Yehoshua. Now we understand why Yehoshua is compared to the fig. Shalomash mitocha oel in etzira sata'ina. Right? It's such a beautiful analogy. If what he's saying is correct, and that is that the fig ripens a little bit every day, and therefore it means I have to take care of it every single day in order for it to ripen properly. That is the most beautiful analogy to Talmud Torah. Number one is you don't master and acquire Torah overnight. You can't just wake up one morning and say, I'm going to cram the test for Torah, and then I'm going to forget about it afterwards. That's how, by the way, I used to study for tests. I was a master. I had like a PhD in cramming. I was horrible at taking notes. So what I used to do, I went to school with girls. So what I used to do is I used to ask to borrow their notes, and then I would run to, at the time we had Kinko's right by school. I'd quickly photocopy like 150 pages of the notes, run back to school before they noticed it was missing, give it back to them, and then I would go into the side and I would literally memorize 150 pages of notes and then take the test, do well, and forget about it 5 seconds later, right? That is not how Torah learning works. That might help you pass 11th grade chemistry or 12th grade physics, but that's not going to help you master Torah. Rather, the way you master Torah is by studying it diligently every single day, understanding that you can't jump the ladder, and you can't skip steps, and you can't master it overnight. You can't cram for the test of Torah learning, but it requires study diligently and regularly every single day. That is what he says is the comparison to this fig. Now you understand Rashi's comment. Again, Rashi's comment tells us that when it describes why Yehoshua is going to be chosen, because he never left the base medrash. And Rashi quoted a pasuk that says, "No tzerteina yochal pirin." And we ask, what's the connection between Yehoshua in the fig? And now we understand that both Yehoshua and the fig have something in common, which is that they both require daily attention. Torah, we have to make time for Torah learning every single day. You cannot skip days of learning. It is a 5-minute habit. It can be a 5-minute habit. It could be longer, but minimally a 5-minute habit every single day that's going to change our life and it's going to continue to propel our growth. It's not that you can skip multiple days of learning and then cram at the last second. You know, I don't insult someone. But, you know, it's not that like, oh, I'm going to skip 6 days of learning and then on Shabbos I'm going to make up all my learning. It doesn't work that way. Torah is meant to be learned a little bit every single day. And if we do that, that's where we're going to achieve success, no different than our dear friend, the fig. What do you have for me?
A
pomologist. Okay. So, Jonah, you were wrong. It is a pomologist, not a fruitologist.
Or
a fruitarian. Thank you to all the pomologists out there. I'm sorry that I insulted you. Okay, so that was idea number two. Idea number one came from the Or HaChaim, which is that you become what you scroll. Idea number two is that greatness is hidden in the small steps every single day that we do diligently. That's how we're going to master Torah learning. Chevra. It's not just enough to come to the Thursday night cheer because I give you hot dogs and french fries and onion rings. We have to make time for learning every single day. Be like the fig, which I happen to love. Idea number three comes from the Eretz HaTzvi, Rav Aryeh Tzvi Frimmer, the Kashuk Glover, I believe. And yeah, Kashuk Glover, he writes something magnificent as well. After Pinchas does his heroic act with Zimri and Cosby, the Torah tells us, Hineni nosein lo es brisi shalom. Hashem says, I'm going to give you my covenant of peace. And everyone talks about why he gets the covenant of peace. Why does Pinchas need it at that moment? Very famously, the Netziv and others write, because our actions have consequences on us, whether we like it or not. And so because Pinchas had to act in such an aggressive fashion, lest he become an aggressive person, Hashem compensates it by giving him the bris shalom. But over there, very famously, if you look in the Torah, you'll notice that the vav in the word shalom is cut in half. And so the question is, why is it cut in half? Now, he quotes here the Shailos HaTshuvos Rabbi Akiva Eiger. And Rabbi Akiva Eiger in the Shailos HaTshuvos writes that there are actually two opinions for how you're supposed to cut the vav. Again, the vav is a straight line. Picture like an I or an L, okay, a lowercase L. So there are two ways to do it. One is to sever it completely and to have a break between the top and the bottom so that it no longer mimics a vav at all. Option two is to cut it mostly, but so that it's like dangling, right? We live in Palm Beach County. We're very familiar with hanging chad. So hanging vav, right? Instead of the hanging chad, we have hanging vavs. So it's not severed completely, but rather it is broken in the middle. What is this argument about? And why would it be broken completely? We can communicate the same message, he says, by breaking it partially, but leaving a little bit of it hanging. Says the Kashuk Glover something so beautifully. He says, why do we cut it in half? Look at the second underline on page number four. Vishita shniya svirlu. De'inyan ha-shalom hu l'chaber ha-kol yachad. The whole point of peace is to bring things together. You bring people together. That's the whole goal of peace. V'chol's man she'ina chibur legamri bein kol ha-chalakim lo nechshav afilu miktas chibur. When it comes to peace, there is no such thing as partial peace. Now, I can make many comments about the recent deal that Trump cut with Iran and the partial deal that they made that's being negotiated and the success and the likelihood of the success that that's going to have with the Iranians. But I won't go in that direction. I'll go in a direction when it comes to us or when it comes to our interpersonal relationships. He says there's no such thing as partial peace. You either have peace or you don't. You can't have half-baked peace. You can't have peace halfway. You can't be partially at peace with someone. You either have peace or you don't have peace. You either have Avas Yisrael or you don't have Avas Yisrael. There's no middle ground. You either love every Jew or you don't love every Jew. You either approach every situation with the mindset of, I'm going to create shalom in this situation, I'm going to create peace in this situation, or you don't. So don't think that you can be tough and you can be vicious when you need to be, and you can be a shark, and then at other times, I'm going to apologize afterwards. No. Peace is all in or all out. That's what the Kashuk Glover writes. He says on the page number five, the next page, he creates an analogy to the malacha of lush in Hilchos Shabbos, which I'm not going to get into. But he writes here, V'hachanami kevan de'inyan shalom, hu chibur kol Yisrael yachad. Right? Peace is bringing all Jews together. Kol shelo nishlam achibur, lo nechshav chisaron bechamos levad, rach chisaron be'echus. Ki ein kan afilu miktas sheyach chibur shalim. Again, you can't have partial peace amongst the Jewish people. We either are going to strive for peace, or we're failing in peace. Ularam ezek siv vav mufseket be'emsa. He says, now you understand the opinion that the vav is cut completely. Vein suras vav b'chol chelik b'vnei atzma. It doesn't resemble a vav at all. Why? L'rame shekol zman she'in achibur shalem. Because as long as it's not completely together, lo nechshav adayin shalom klal. It's not considered peace at all. The same way if I cut the vav in half. It's not that it's a vav, it just looks different. No, it's not a vav at all anymore. So too, if I don't have complete peace, I don't have peace at all. Ach la'asi liya shalom l'gamrei uladasa ta'avik'tia. In the future, when Eliyahu comes, we'll have complete peace. Now, why do I think this is such a beautiful idea? I think it's such a beautiful idea because I think it's very important for this time period of the year. Of course, tonight is Shavuot Batamis, tomorrow is a fast day, and we begin the period of the 3 weeks. I find it hysterical and ironic every year that every year we pay lip service to how we should have peace, and we should have avas achinam, and we lament sinas chinam, we lament basis hatred, we say we should love every Jew, and then we go out and we argue and we fight bitterly with other Jews. Now, why do we do that? We do that because we rationalize it to ourselves. We say to ourselves, no, really, of course I have avas Yisrael, and really I love every Jew, but this is more important. Or, but this is the line in the sand that has to be that can't be crossed. Or because I'm right and they're wrong. We make excuses along the way. And so therefore, everyone talks the talk about avas chinam and laments sinas chinam. But at the end of the day, all of us rationalize it away and essentially continue to behave the way we would normally behave. Right? Obviously, you can make a commentary about what's going on in Israel. You can make a commentary about what's going on in the Jewish people in general. Which is that I think if you stop the average Jew on the street and said, do you believe in loving every Jew? Every Jew would agree, right? Do you agree that we should have peace amongst every Jew? Every Jew would agree. But then if you started getting into the nuances of the conversation, you would see very quickly that their opinions would dictate that they don't essentially love every Jew and that they are judgmental of certain segments or certain sects of Judaism that they might disagree with or practice differently from. Now, of course, that's okay. Judaism is not monolithic. It doesn't have to be homogeneous. We believe that people can practice differently and experience differently, and you could have difference of opinions. That's all healthy, and that's all well and good. But it's a mindset that we approach. And I think what the Kashrut Lover is teaching us is that the mindset is binary, right? You can manifest it differently. I can disagree with you. But my mindset of how I approach the conversation is binary, which is that either I love every Jew or I don't. Now, it doesn't mean I agree with every Jew, but I have to love every Jew. Now, why do I love every Jew if I don't agree with them? The answer is because I see something inherent and innate in every single Jew that differentiates them from every other person, which is that they are created with a Tzelem Elohim. They are created with a Chelek Elohim Mamish from Hashem. They are created in the image of God. And so even if I disagree with you, even if I don't, I might not even have to like you, but I have to love you. Because at the end of the day, you are a creation of the Almighty. And you have as much godliness in you as I have in me. Now, I can disagree with you. I can respectfully voice my opinion differently than you. But in my approach, in my attitude, I believe what the Kashrut Lover is telling us is that it's binary. You either love every Jew or you don't love every Jew. You can't partially love every Jew because then you don't really love every Jew. Because if you accept the premise that loving every Jew is predicated on the fact that every Jew is created in the image of God, then there's no half loving a Jew. I don't half love God. I don't half love my siblings. I don't always get along with my siblings. I don't always agree with them on everything. I'm just joking, Ma. I always get along with my siblings. Right? I was just using an example, right? You don't always agree with them on everything. You don't always see eye to eye to them, but you love them. And you would take a bullet for them. And you would do anything if they needed something, right? So that's exactly, I think, what the Kashrut Lover is saying here. The Vav of Shalom. There are two opinions. One is it's partially severed. But the other is that it's completely cut in half. And the Kashrut Lover says, I want to understand why we have to completely cut in half. And what he says is to show us, and again, it's not my words, it's his. He says, "V'chol zman she'in achibur legamrei, lo nechshav afilu miktas chibur." If it's not completely connected, it's not connected at all. And then he goes on to the second page. If it's not completely at peace, then there's no peace at all. "She'kol zman she'in achibur shalem, lo nechshav adayim shalom klal." And so I think it's something for all of us to think about as we go into the 3 weeks, and we're going to talk a lot about we're lamenting and railing against sinas chinam. And we're going to talk about avas Yisrael, we have to love every Jew. What does that really mean to me? How does that really practice and manifest itself in my everyday life? What about my friendships, my family relationships, right? Things that possibly could become divisive. And what am I going to do to contribute to the solution of that? And what does that mean sometimes, even when you do disagree with people? How do I criticize someone in a way that still shows them that I love them and I respect who they are and that I value them as a person? So we saw three ideas in 30 minutes. Idea number one came from the Or HaChaim, that you are what you scroll. And therefore, we have to understand that what we look at has a big impact on us, whether we like it or not. Idea number two came from this beautiful Parsha sheet, and I apologize that I forgot who it's from, but it's on beinenu.com. You can look at it. But the idea of what's the comparison between Yoshua and the fig? Both of them require consistency, a little bit every single day. That's how you achieve mastery in Torah. Mastery in Torah is not by binging. It's not by going to Kinko's and copying 150 pages and memorizing it 5 minutes before the test. That is not how we become real servants of Hashem. Idea number three was from the Eretz Tzvi, the Kazhuk Glover, about there's no such thing as partial peace. You have to be the person who wants to bring people together. How does that apply itself and manifest itself in our everyday life? And what are you going to do to contribute to that over the next 3 weeks? With that, I wish everyone a good Shabbos.